Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Chauncey Show, where we're always right and never left. We put God first and politics second. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Welcome to the show. Tonight, we have a young man who is running for Congress in New Hampshire out of the 1st Congressional District. He is a Marine veteran. And he brings an interesting dynamic to the front of the political landscape. And we're proud and honored to have him in the studio today, Mr. Julian Agard. He is a congressional candidate for New Hampshire's 1st Congressional District. Let's welcome him to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for your service to our country. As I was reviewing your bio before the show, I said, it's too much. I'll take up half the show if I read your bio. So I says, I'm just going to do a brief introduction, and I'm going to let you talk a little bit about who you are. You have some humble beginnings. You know, you've lived here, and then you went to California, then you came back. Talk a little bit about, you know, who you are as a person, and then, you know, then you can get into what, you know, made you decide to get involved in politics, and then we can talk about issues after that.
All right. Well, I used to live in Dayton, Ohio, off of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where my mom was active duty. I was born in RAF Upper Heyford, England, when my parents were still active. Then about 12 years old, my dad and me moved up to New Hampshire to take over my grandmother's house because she had passed away. So we lived in Atkinson, New Hampshire, and I graduated out of Timberlane. And I always knew I wanted to serve, but then I knew I wanted to be the best, so I joined the Marines. And after being stationed out in California and going overseas to Iraq, coming back to California, I met my wife. I had my first son while I was active. Then I got out. I was medically retired in 2011. I lived out in California for a few years trying to make it work to keep my wife close to her family. And after moving back home to work DOD security on Pease Air National Guard Base, I came to the realization that the same problems I saw in California had followed me here. I assumed I was coming back to the live free or die state that I grew up in, and apparently quite a bit has changed. And over the past 12 years, I'd say 12 to 15 years, I've noticed that the political conversation in this country has degraded to the point where we spend the majority of our time talking past each other. But when you get down to just policy and you ditch the talking points, the party, everything, when you get down to just policy, we agree on like 80% of things. And about 10% of things, we're talking past each other due to the language that the media has convinced us to use on both sides of the aisle, because both sides get paid off of the controversy for clicks, likes, retweets, shares, and ratings. And we don't actually end up discussing the issue. We spend more of our time discussing how to discuss the issue. So basically, I realize that there's no solutions in politics, and I'm starting to get angry about it. And I'm sick of people grifting off of the pain, of politicians grifting off of the pain of the average voter in this country. And I actually want to fix it. And my primary goal in going to D.C. is to fix it so that I can go home.
Amen.
So that's a little rundown about myself. And I've been into politics since I was 12 years old. For the last couple of years, I've done speech analysis, political strategy, and I've sent it to multiple congressional candidates, congressmen, and even at one point some of the advisors within the Trump administration. And I'm a grassroots activist.
Thank you for that awesome introduction. Let's talk about New Hampshire. What are some of the issues that you identified in your district and in your state that you would like to address when you get to Congress?
Well, one of the major issues in my state is we are the state with the state motto, live free or die. And even many of the liberals on the left believe in that state motto. Now, the diametrically opposed, the far left, have made their way into New Hampshire and are trying to change the conversation. But still, the average person, the average Granite Stater, does believe in a basic core set of principles, and live and let live, live free or die is pretty much how we live up here. And the encroachment of D.C. politics into the state is something that is not being taken very well, where activists and politicians are trying to make issues relevant in the state that are relevant in other states, or they're relevant nationally, but they don't necessarily resonate here because we don't have those issues. Like, we have the nation, I believe presently, we have the lowest unemployment rate in the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as jobs and things like that go, it's not as big of an issue here. We do have an opioid epidemic, and due to this last election, everyone woke up, not so much necessarily about whether or not there's voter fraud, because we haven't proved that yet, but there is enough irregularities in our voting system. There were things that were actually wrong. Our voter integrity bill in this country was passed unanimously in both houses of our state house and by our governorship. So it's not, this is a bipartisan thing. It's trying to fix our election so that we all have confidence in them. And confidence in the election should not be a partisan issue. It should be a very nonpartisan issue, because we should all care about making sure that our votes are all being counted properly.
You know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, as far as that goes, we found some major irregularities, mostly with how the machine operates. And so far, the speculation has been the mass volume of votes that they're not used to handling, or that the machines have not been updated properly because they're about 20 years old. So there's multiple issues that were going on, and it's been politicized once again because there's a lot more stuff going on nationally that is being sort of proxied into New Hampshire. The other issue that is made its way into New Hampshire is critical race theory.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really have a race problem in New Hampshire. I'm a minority. I'm a black man. I've never been called a racial epithet in New Hampshire until about 2 months ago. And that is largely due to backlash from, well, you can't tell somebody that they're irredeemably racist and evil for 10 plus years and expect them to not backlash against it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can discuss most of these racial issues like without trying to kill each other and without calling each other names. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. never once advocated for not discussing race or not seeing color. All he did was advocate that it does not make up the content of the man. Not to judge people by the color of their skin. Not that it doesn't exist. Not that culture isn't relevant. Not that we can't see it and acknowledge it and discuss it, but you should not judge each other based on it.
Amen.
And I think we're sort of moving backwards. And I believe a lot of those issues are being forced in society because the demand for racism exceeds the supply. But at the same time, on the left, they're using it as a political weapon because the right refuses to talk about it. And if they know that it's our weakness, of course, they're going to use it on a regular basis. Whereas on the right, we refuse to talk about it because most of the people in charge in the GOP don't know enough black history to actually be able to argue against the left in the first place. So, and it's a losing argument, and they are cowards, so they just avoid it entirely. Whereas I say, systemic racism is real. It was created by Woodrow Wilson, FDR, and literally every Democrat since. And Republicans have not been present in minority neighborhoods since 1877 to be able to actually fix it and overturn a lot of these policies so that they're not harming the inner cities and communities. So a combination of their derelict and our apathy has caused a serious issue in this country, and our refusal to discuss it has made their power to tear down the government and get their Marxist proletariat revolution all more reality.
Well said. Well said. What do you think the answer is?
I think the answer is to discuss the issue, discuss it in an intellectual level. And I say solutions over politics. Ditch the talking points. Stop talking about politicians. It's not a Trump or a Reagan or a Lincoln thing. Discuss the root of the problem. The root of the problem is bad policy. Perfect example. Bad policing comes from bad policy. If you create unnecessary bad laws that illegalize sodas, jaywalking, broken taillights, having a dime bag in your house, in your pocket while you're sitting on the couch eating Cheetos, harms literally nobody. Illegalizing mundane behavior, that creates unnecessary interaction between the citizenry and the police force. This makes cops at an adversarial relationship between themselves and the community that they're supposed to serve. So when you need cooperation, you don't get it. When you need a witness, you don't have it. When you need to be able to peaceably walk up to somebody and question them, they're antagonistic at you. That in combination with a lack of training. Use of force training is expensive. Hand-to-hand training is expensive. Shoot-no-shoot training is expensive. Even if you file for the federal government programs that allow you to do it for free at the federal government's expense, you still have to pay overtime hours for those officers to do that training. And the problem is that becomes expensive in and of itself. So what you end up with are cops graduate the police academy, and they requalify each year, but all their skills in between requalification are basically left up to them. So your fantastic cops will excel and your bottom of the barrel will fail. And let's be honest, no matter what the job is, whether it's a cop, a soldier, a Marine, a firefighter, not everybody is Superman. So there will be a bottom of the barrel. There will be a guy like Derek Chauvin that completely screws up 10 ways till Sunday. And that doesn't mean that George Floyd wasn't wrong. It just means that Derek Chauvin failed at every avenue where he was supposed to do the right thing. Both can be true at the same time. And I think that's the problem in our society right now is everything's an either or rather than a, why don't we address the root cause of the problem? I see the root cause of the problem when it comes to crime and the degradation of society, economics. We ship jobs overseas. We ship jobs out of rural Appalachian white areas and cause poverty and meth addictions and opioid addictions there and a spike in crime. And we did the same thing in inner cities, where we ship jobs overseas, and all of a sudden you have the communities are crime-ridden and they're filled with drugs and they're filled with poverty. The problem is both groups are saying the exact same thing, but you know what's a little bit different about both groups? The media only cops for one group. One group is represented by Republicans. The other group is represented by Democrats. Both parties neglect both of those groups of people, yet their complaints are damn near the same. See, we're all airing our grievances against the state, against the government, and they have convinced us to take each other out rather than to hear our grievances. And the media has helped them do it by characterizing the entirety of the U.S. populace as the top 1% or the bottom 1%. All black people are either athletes, actors, or musicians, or they're babies, mamas, and thugs. And on the right, in the white community, they characterize everyone as either Gordon Gekko or Larry the Cable Guy. And it's never anything in between. We don't talk about the cop, the firefighter, the doctor, the lawyer, the small business owner. We don't approach things with any sort of nuance of reality anymore. Everyone's perfectly happy to stick to their talking points, which are designed for little quick I got you moments so that everyone can go back to their base and say, look how I owned that other guy.
Exactly.
We need to focus on solutions. We need to start selling the solution to the problem, not the party. And the solution is conservatism. It is free market. It is individual liberty, the Constitution, protecting the republic for which it stands, and the inalienable rights of the individual. That is what the solution is. It is deregulating. It is pulling back the government's boot off of people's necks. It is chipping away at the concrete, cementing their shoes to the asphalt so that they cannot pull themselves up by the bootstraps.
Sounds like the oppressive policies of the Democratic left. You know, you are absolutely on point.
And the statist right.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot of rhinos on our side whose every solution is also government.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where Donald Trump had the problem when he came in, because he really put a wedge between the establishment of the Democrat and Republican Party rhinos, of that it could not be business as usual because it wasn't serving the people's interest.
Exactly. He pulled back the curtain on the entirety of D.C., and in their desire to get rid of him, they exposed themselves like a middle-aged man at a children's soccer game. Now we see them for exactly what they are. They're sick and they're degenerates and they all need to go.
Amen. You know, it's ironic because one of the policies that I just found out as of late, maybe a month or so ago, that was very interesting to me, as we're talking about, had Donald Trump put a wedge through the establishment of the Republican Democratic Party, is, you know, I've always known that he cut off their money from lobbyists, but I didn't realize that he put a 5-year ban in place for lobbyists in Washington, D.C. Now, that is a person that is trying to get rid of the swamp. And the ironic
part is he also deregulated a lot. And that the dirty side of regulations most people don't understand is congressmen are not experts in fields. I repeat, they are not experts in every major industry and field. I'll say it again, not experts in major industries and fields. Most of them are lawyers and grifters with political science degrees that have never worked a real job in their lives. Then they ran for office, and they've been there ever since. The way to solve that problem is to start messing with their regulations, because when a new law, a lobbyist convinces the people that we need a new law, all the Karens of the world say there should be a law for that. And then Congress goes, okay, well, we know nothing about that industry. Let's bring in the top guy in the industry. So we're bringing in the next crony capitalist to help them craft regulations to actually force smaller businesses out of the marketplace, to actually give himself a larger market share, because his business is established. He can afford to take that blunt impact because he's going to gain a larger market share on the back end. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be able to go back to that same government that same politician and get subsidies and donate to their campaigns so that they continue to do favors for him. Dirty side of regulation.
Well stated. For those that are tuning in and listening to the Chauncey Show, we're always right, never left. We're proud and honored to have in the studio Marine veteran Julio Aguard, who is running for Congress in New Hampshire's 1st District. You have enlightened us a great deal. We have about 20 more minutes left in the show. You've covered a lot of ground in one show, and really policies that directly impact people, which are extremely important. And, you know, as I'm listening to you talk about the Republic, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, you know, our public education system in this country has failed our children with the basic fundamental understanding of what American government is about. Civic duty, civic responsibility, statesmanship. Most schools today don't teach American history. And it's sad when they want to talk about critical race theory when we have a graduation rate that is the lowest in the world, this country, rather than teaching our kids critical thinking skills and how to compete in a global society. The left is continually using these talking points to further divide us. And as you so eloquently stated earlier, we're talking about the problem, but we're not talking about the solutions. And the left gets on that hamster wheel of talking about problems continuously and creating new problems. And yes, the GOP and Republicans are at fault for not standing up against this nonsense and allowing them to perpetuate the racism narrative against the Republican Party that historically has been anti-racist in all of their policies in America.
And the Democrats, just anti-racist. We were the
Amen.
Pro-black party.
That's right.
We were the pro-black party in its original form. Excellent success through building up together as a community, through deregulation, low taxation, through Christ and cultural conservatism and limited government. We did for self. We built together. We worked together as a community. That is how Booker T, that is how Frederick Douglass, that is how Marcus Garvey, Carter G. Woodson, that is how we built. That is how we built. We were the pro-black party, but that has been perverted by the left into an attack on people who are not black. Now being pro-black, and I want to illustrate something, because they're weaponizing black culture against America right now, they've phrased every attack, everything that the Democrat has done. What they've basically done is put America on trial for all of their own transgressions. So they've convinced the entirety of the country that we should discuss all the things they've done to minorities in this country, women in this country, as if it's an American problem. It's not an American problem. It's a left problem. It's a Democrat problem. They're trying to divide us to get that Marxist proletariat revolution. They tried it during the 30s. It didn't work. They tried it again during the 60s, and they got the first step. Now that generation has grown up, and they've passed the torch onto my generation. Well, guess what? My generation just saw the largest economic growth in world history, the largest technological growth in world history. We have more abundance. We have more food. Every time they predicted a disaster that was going to destroy humanity, not only did it turn out to be wrong, we turned out to do the exact opposite, because a rising tide floats all boats. We don't have to live in despair and redistribute when we can grow together. So I say, I want to bring back that pro-black party. I want to bring back that pro-cultural party, that melting pot party where bring the best of what you got to America and let's make America great again. I don't have to choose between being black and being American. They're not oppositional. I get to have it all. That's why America is better than everywhere else. I get to have my heritage. We're the bastards from all over the world. And we still ended up being better than everybody else. I get to have my heritage. I get to have my American heritage. I get to have my history. The only reason they are able to push critical race theory is because when they took over education, they decided to stop teaching black history. They started to take it out of the lessons where it used to be prior to Black History Month. It used to be taught wherever it was relevant in history, not as a single month where you try to cram in 450 years of history into 28 days. It was taught wherever it was relevant. So if you're discussing the Civil War, you're discussing the Buffalo Soldiers. If you're discussing and the Indian War and the westward expansion, you're discussing Buffalo Soldiers. If you're discussing World War II, you're discussing the Tuskegee Airmen. You're discussing the Red Tails. You're discussing the Montfort Point Marines, World War I. You're discussing all of this. So they have bastardized education, and by taking out a portion of education that is stuff that we should all know, they're able to manipulate it because an eighth grader with knowledge of black history would be able to debunk a lot of this stupid stuff coming in our current education system right now.
It is sad.
The problem is we don't learn history anymore. We don't learn civics, and apparently math is racist now. And science is apparently racist now. And don't forget, college prep courses. Those are racist now too.
You know, it's ironic that you bring that up. As you know, I'm a few years older than you. Actually, I probably have children your age. But when I was in high school, I took college prep courses. And it's ironic that you're calling them, or I should say that they're calling it. I mean, it's so the identity politics from the left is beyond the pale. It's all a distraction, as you said earlier, to continue to talk about the problem instead of attacking the solution. I mean, I denounce identity politics at every turn because, as you said, you're not discussing the root cause. You're skimming over it, giving it a political spin, giving it a talking point to keep the conversation going of an issue that could be solved, as you said, with the conversation and discussion. But when you have the media, when you have the media promoting the suggestions and ideas from the left, you're already behind the eight ball and trying to engage in civil discourse about the issue because it's already been programmed by the media to put a spin or put the narrative out there of the false truth. So anyone that opposes that false truth, you're a conspiracy theory, you're out of your mind, or you're racist, and they come back with all these other negative identities that aren't relevant to the problem.
Well, we have a problem on our side, and it's not being proactive. Our apathy is how the left got here. I don't know, many people have not read the Constitution recently, but everyone seems to remember it takes a knowledgeable populace to maintain the Republic. Everyone forgets that there was a responsibility to be engaged. If you're going to say the private sector provides, that there's charity and so on and so forth, you actually have to engage in that private sector. There is a responsibility as conservatives for us to be stewards of our community. As Christians, we are supposed to be stewards of our community. As men, we are supposed to be kings of our castles. We are supposed to be engaged in society to make up for where government is not supposed to trod. That means no mandating religious tenets, regardless of how moral they may be, in government. We were founded explicitly not to do that. The church always made up in private life for where the government was not supposed to go. That was the responsibility of conservatives, of social conservatism versus conservative governance, you know, protection of the Constitution, the Republic, and the individual liberties.
Mm-hmm.
Our problem is when the left came for our cities, we left. When they came for our universities, mm-hmm. we left. When they
exactly.
came for those states to take over an entire state, we left the state. Then now we've walked away. We voted with our feet. We voted with our dollars so much. We have lost every bastion of the U.S. infrastructure, every bastion and cornerstone of the media, of Hollywood, of TV. We've lost every bastion of news. We've lost
education.
Every single set education. Mm-hmm. We've lost the culture entirely, and we're only just now finding it because we finally grabbed a pair and decided to start building our own again. We decided to stop asking Mother May I and start standing toe-to-toe with the left and the status that have permeated through our own party and tried to take it over the years, who say, you know, the Second Amendment doesn't really apply here, or maybe we can forgive this over here, and you don't need that soda, you don't need salt on your burger, you don't need this or that, or maybe we can get rid of steak as long as I can get a nice big fat check from the lobbyists that put me here. Like, we've acquiesced far too often. It's time to stop compromising on our principles and stand on them or die on them. Live free or die. That wasn't a suggestion. It was a mandate. It was a responsibility that you fight for your freedoms or you will lose them forever.
Amen. Amen. And you know, as being a veteran of more than anyone, how important that is. I was fortunate to be raised by a Navy veteran, and I always make a joke that I'd rather have gone into the service than go to school than rather be raised by a veteran, because my dad was tough. But, you know, Donald Trump, you know, and my hat goes off to him, because he pierced through the veil of the type of corruption that we're talking about in all of these entities, and he's woke up 80 million Americans, or half of America. And even today, and even in your conversation with me, you're pushing back, you're raising a level of consciousness of where the GOP party should go. And this is refreshing to hear young people like yourself standing up and speaking truth to power, because really the future is in your hands. And I'm so happy and blessed to see you young people like yourself and others across the country that are standing up for what is right, not for what's popular. Standing up for what they believe in based on their faith. These tenets are so important in our society today, more so than ever. And I'm just so humbled, and proud and blessed that you're on my show, sharing your knowledge, your insight, and your faith with us, giving us hope that America can change. But we have to have the conversation on solutions and not the talking points of identity politics.
We got to stop being reactionary.
That too, yeah.
We got to stop being reactionary. Damn near, if you dissect all of our talking points, they are either designed to deflect, they're designed to one-up, or they're designed as a quick retort against whatever the left has. Very few times do we use a talking point where we actually get to the core of an issue. One of the best talking points we've had was against the gender wage gap. And you know why? It's because we used reality to debunk the left's narrative. These people don't live in reality. And when I talk about the left, I'm talking about the politicians. I'm talking about the people with the microphones, not the average liberal voter. I talk to liberals all the time. Most of them are very reasonable. It's only like when you get to the like Antifa, Che Guevara t-shirt wearing,
BLMs,
Bernie Sanders supporters, like the far, far left, where you start to have an issue. Most of these people just don't, most of the people who claim socialism or claim democratic socialism, they don't even know what it is. They've never read Karl Marx. They've never read Engels. They've never read Trotsky. They've never read Mussolini or Gentile. They've never read Goebbels. They don't understand. They really don't. They don't understand Mao.
So, sir, take it up a notch. Let them go. Let them. Let them go. And
was a socialist too.
Exactly. Let them go and spend a week in a socialist country. See, a lot of these people that we're talking about. I mean, I've been very fortunate to travel around the world, you know, and I you know, it's very sad when people make comments about this country, because with all its faults, it's the greatest country in the world. Even people, and I make this comment, even people on welfare in this country live better than people around the world.
That's true.
So when you talk about, you know, I have a problem when you talk about systemic racism, because, you know, my first thing is that where is it at today? And if it is, because it's only a Democratic talking point, because systemic racism did not impinge my success, my parents' success, and my parents. My father was in the Navy during the Second World War when blacks couldn't even be on the top deck. So it didn't hinder. So these, your success is measured by your own integrity and your own moral fiber. The government's not responsible for your success, nor is the government responsible for our failures.
You're right.
We need to start being accountable.
That the left is complaining about is actually localized to deep blue
cities.
They
created it. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Well,
and,
it's localized. Like when people say that it doesn't exist, I go, stop defending Democrats from the effect of their own policies. No. Take that crown of thorns and nail it to their head. Make them wear that.
Exactly.
It is their system. It is localized to deep blue cities that the Democrats owned and ran since prior to the end of segregation.
And, you know,
so
let me just.
They had control over these cities then, prior to the civil rights movement, and they still have control over them now. So this system that we were supposed to have torn down, national policy very rarely makes it past local government. All politics is local.
And just to, you're absolutely correct, you know, and to add to that, you know, I made a comment to a fellow Democrat, a guy I grew up with, and I says, describe to me, and you made the point excellent. I says, describe to me where systemic racism exists today. And he said, redlining. And I didn't think as quickly as listening to you now, but my rhetorical question should have been, well, have you asked your Democratic legislators who are in control of all those districts where redlining occurs to challenge the law? Because the redlining of people being able to buy houses, even though my dad and I understood redlining existed in the 60s, because I remember how my dad brought his first house for $22,000. The mayor called the bank at that time and says, Chauncey has a job with the city. You know, so I understood, but it existed differently back then. But to say today that people are being blocked out because of race, no, it's because of economics. Money dictates policy.
It's bad economic policy.
Exactly. You know, we only have a couple of minutes left, Julian. I hope that you would come back on my show again. You have been an extraordinary source of information that people need to hear. Please share with my audience if they want to volunteer to your campaign, donate, if they want to have you on their show, how can they get a hold of you?
You can email me at julian@ julian, NH.com. That's julian@julian4newhampshire.com. Or you can call my phone. My campaign phone number is on me at all times. It's 603-327-5567. Or you could find me on Twitter or Facebook. On Facebook, it's ACIARD for Congress. That's ACCIARD for Congress spelled out. Or ACCIARD2022 on Twitter. My goal is to go to D.C., fix D.C., and go home and be a normal citizen, because that's what we were supposed to be. That's what we were designed to be. Citizen legislators. The Cincinnatus Pact. I aim to be someone like George Washington or Marcus Aurelius. I'm a radical Republican like Frederick Douglass.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your service to our country. And thank you very much, sir, for wanting to stand up for what's right in America today by running for Congress. God bless you and your family, and I hope that you would come back on our show again. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
God bless you too, and I look forward to coming back.
You're listening and tuning into the Chauncey Show. We were honored to have in the studio Marine veteran and congressional candidate, New Hampshire's 1st District, Julian Agard, running for Congress, speaking truth to power, talking about the Republic, the Constitution, talking about the tenets that this country was founded on, that if we're going to save our nation, it is imperative that we raise a level of consciousness, we have civil discourse. We talk about solutions instead of chasing problems. We're proud to have him on the show. We wish him the best of luck, and hopefully he will come on again in the near future. Next up on the Chauncey Show, we're going to have another exciting show coming up. Let's see who's coming up this Thursday. This Thursday, we're going to have in the studio the gentleman who is running for Virginia governor, Merle Rutledge, who was also, I believe, a former U.S. congressional candidate. He's going to be in the studio talking about his plans for Virginia. Lots going on there in that state and what plans he has for the nation. You can follow the Chauncey Show on Parler, on Twitter, Chauncey Show USA, on Facebook, The Chauncey Show. You can also visit our website, thechaunceyshow.com. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. You can follow me on Twitter at NY Talk Radio Host, also on Facebook, Right Talk Radio Host. And also you can visit my website, subscribe to my blog, Chauncey I Brown III, ChaunceyIBrown3.com. And I share the news from the top 10 conservative news sites from across the country. So I bring it to you live, up to date. So subscribe so I can keep you informed, and you'll be updated every morning on what's going on in your country today. We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. We want to thank you all for your support and prior donations. If you are able to, we would appreciate, because we operate on small donations to help us to continue to voice and be the people, a voice for the people. Please consider to donate to PayPal me, The Chauncey Show, or The Chauncey Show at Patreon. We thank you very much. For those who have contributed, we have a list of those up on our website. We use the first initial and last name to protect their anonymity. So we want to thank you all again for tuning in. We look forward to you tuning in on Thursday. Thank you again. Be safe. God bless you all. Remember, keep the faith. Good night now.